Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikulskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Mark Graney, and he is back with his 10th Gray Man novel. It's hard to believe it's 10 already, but this one's called Relentless. It's brand new, and it's available everywhere. It's just one of these, another 160,000-word thriller, I guess, that we all read as if it was, you know, maybe a 40,000 word thriller, because it just goes so fast. But Mark, the pace on this one, it was fantastic. So I know it's almost impossible to set this up as far as what the little teaser, but really you've got some missing assets that Court Gentry needs to recover, right?
Yeah. Thank you. The Courtland Gentry is my hero. He's the one they call the Gray Man. He's a CIA contract agent at this stage of his career. And in the very beginning of this book, he's yanked out of a CIA medical facility and thrown back into the field by the deputy director of operations because he has to find out why these intelligence officials from different agencies all around the world are disappearing. They're just sort of falling off the map. It leads him to Venezuela, and then it leads him into Germany, and it ultimately has to help unravel an international conspiracy to incite a war between the United States and Iran.
Well, Court's a hurting unit as the book begins, and that a little bit of that comes into play later, but when you've got a man like Court Gentry, he's not a superhero. He's a human being like the rest of us, and he has these things that befall him. So when you give him these certain ailments or whatever, do you try to get as realistic as possible into what he would suffer based upon what he's gone through?
I do. It does a couple of different things. I like to show him, my hero, vulnerable in more ways than just, you know, bullets whizzing by his head. That is obviously a vulnerability, and that obviously happens in these types of stories, but there's other vulnerabilities that he can face. And it goes to show the grit and the resolve and the relentlessness of the character. He has this mission. It's a very personal mission to him because at the core of it, he's trying to protect someone who he loves, and there's nothing that can keep him down. He has this very bad bone infection from an injury he received in the last book, but he just realizes he's got to get out of bed, find a way to manage that and not die from that while he goes out and goes after the villains and unravels the mystery.
I got a little bit of a smile on my face as I saw that a lot of this book was set in Berlin, in Germany, because I know you spent quite a bit of time there, you know the city well, and I have to think, how fortuitous was it that you picked a location for this book where I'm sure you couldn't travel for the actual research for this particular book, right?
I was so lucky in that regard. My plan was to rent an apartment. I love Berlin. It's the place that I go to whenever I can. Whenever I'm in Europe, I end up in Berlin for a few days. I researched a novel I wrote with Tom Clancy there several years ago and have been back multiple times. I actually lived in Cologne for a while. So when this pre-COVID, I plotted this book in Berlin, and the idea was I was going to rent an apartment there over the summer or the late spring. And then COVID happened, and I was like, okay, I might have to push that back to July. And then I was like, well, the book's due by August, so I don't know if I'm going to get to do the research. And I guess I still couldn't go over there now. I had no idea it would be this long. But you're absolutely right. If this book took place in Mumbai or something like that, a city I've never been to, then it would have been really hard to pull it off.
When you say you go to a location and research, what do you actually do when you're there?
Different things. There's always the atmospherics of a location that I'm not familiar with, which is just the vibe, the way the people are, the way transportation system runs, all these sorts of things that just kind of go to make your story a little bit more realistic, but also you go and you get good ideas. I was in Mexico researching a book kind of in cartel country, and I was just standing in a little plaza, and I saw these wires going across the road, and I had this, and immediately came up with this entire action sequence with Court sliding down the wires, trying to save somebody, and it just kind of built from there. And every single trip I've taken, there's been an event like that. And then also when I come home and I'm writing the book, I just know more about the area. And there's just other things to put in there to make it more realistic.
As you look around at these particular things that you see overseas, there's a lot about spies in the book, well, in a lot of the Court Gentry books, obviously, but with the Gray Man. But is spying, how has that evolved over the years? Because I would think it's not the old cloak and dagger, get smart type of stuff anymore. You can be a spy sitting at a desk in Sioux City, Iowa, or in Nashville, Tennessee, or whatever, and be doing spy work for governments without ever leaving your home anymore, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They say that human intelligence is harder and harder and harder to accomplish with biometric data in people's passport. Makes it really hard for a spy to use multiple identities and go to the same place. That's just one example. But yeah, with cyber and with other types of social engineering that can be done from a computer, it's so much easier to spy without, skulking in a trench coat down an alleyway. There is some of that in this book. This is probably my most espionage heavy of all my Gray Man books. It has all the action. There's assassins and spies and freedom fighters and terrorists and mercenaries. That's all involved, but there's also a lot of cloak and dagger stuff because it still is a thing. And you have to talk about the new technology along with it and the challenges. There's a lot involving facial recognition in this story that makes it a lot harder for a spook to wander the world unnoticed.
Who would be, as you look around when you research espionage, who would be a good target for espionage as far as what intelligence they could give a foreign government? Because if somebody came up to me and said, I want you to spy, I wouldn't have any clue how to do it. So where are the big targets where people want things spied upon, either here or in other countries?
Oh, well, I mean, it's commercial as well as government things. So there was some interesting research I did for this book. The United Arab Emirates plays a large role in this book. And the U.S. government has an agreement with the UAE to where we do not collect intelligence on them. We do not spy on the UAE. We set up their signals intelligence agency, which is their spy agency. And so we just kind of have this gentleman's agreement that we don't spy on them. And I thought, well, how could that, work against us? In doing some research, I learned that the UAE itself started a company called Dark Matter several years ago, which is a cyber hacking company that hires Mossad and NSA and different intelligence agency personnel from around the world and brings them up over to Abu Dhabi and then has them spy on Western targets, not always Western targets, but some of the people they spy on are Western targets. So this is a private company that is totally working for the UAE's intelligence agency, and it's actually spying against Americans in some regards. So there's all sorts of targets out there, and it's the more you dig, it just depends on what the needs of a nation is. So it could be very much commercial targets. China does as much spying on our businesses as they do on our government, for example.
I'm chatting with Mark Graney about his brand new Gray Man novel. This one's called Relentless, and it is available everywhere. These have only been in hardback for the last few. I can't remember how many. This is the 10th one, but the last few have been in hardcover. What's that been like for you to have these books out in hardcover? Does that make a difference for anything as far as marketing?
Yes. Things started going better. Yeah, the first four were all in paperback, and then book five, Backblast, was my first hardcover. And I mean, there is, I guess, a panache to it. You know, I was excited to be out in hardcover. I'd been writing Tom Clancy books, so I'd seen my name in hardcover. It wasn't bad. It was just like I felt like the series was maturing to some degree. Marketing wise, I think there's just more publicity put behind it. And then also, if you think about it, you sort of have two book releases because a year or so after, maybe 6 months after the hardcover comes out, there's a paperback release as well. So I think it just gives your book to more people. It opens it up to more people. And I get people all the time emailing me going, I don't know why, but I can't find your first four books in hardcover. Where do I have to go to buy them? And I'm like, well, I don't even have them in hardcover. They don't exist in hardcover. So I'm glad that, the series got to the level to where it went into hardcover.
Is there a certain segment that will not pick up a Gray Man novel until it's out in paperback, or are these generally the readers that have never read a Gray Man novel and they don't want to pay the full price, but they'll buy a paperback?
Yeah, that happens a lot. And honestly, I totally understand that. I mean, I'll be at an airport, well, pre-COVID, I'll be at an airport at bookstore or and just want something for the airplane. And I don't want a big hardcover. I don't want to spend, that amount of money for something to enjoy. And then I'll pick up a mass market paperback. And, it's almost like a different product in that regard. And, a lot of people don't necessarily have the $20 to $30 it costs to buy a hardcover, or that's not where they want to spend their money. And I'm very happy with them buying the ebook or the waiting for the paperback release and getting it cheaper. As a writer, I'm interested in readers first and foremost. It's like, I want people to read the book. I'm happy when they go to the library and get it.
So as you write these books, the plots are complicated. I mean, it's just the nature of the business. But what software do you use to keep all this organized as you write? Microsoft Word, or are you using something more complicated?
I just use Word. I have tried everything else, and I think all the others are really, really good, like Scrivener. I think it's really, really good. I just don't need that functionality. This is my 20th book being published, my 10th Gray Man book. And I just don't need that functionality. I do use a software called Evernote, which is just a note compiling software to keep things organized. And that helps me. I think Scrivener, you could do it all together. But I write two books a year. And every time when I'm in the middle of writing a book, I'm like, okay, I'm going to take some time off and really like learn about, things that would help me do this more efficiently. But then I immediately get back into the next book, and I just do it all with Microsoft Word. And it's a pretty disorganized process. I don't know that I could teach the craft of writing very well, because I would say, don't do what I do, but here's what I do.
So how many copies of that Word file exist at any one time? You got to have backups.
Oh, I have backups. That's my greatest fear in life, is that I'm going to lose data. I use Carbonite, which, backs things up, and then I have it go to the cloud automatically, and then I save a new version of the book every day. When I open the Word file every morning, I change the file name, I just put the date in there, so I can go back 6 days ago and look at what I wrote then. Maybe I've deleted something since then that I've decided I want. So, yeah, by the time the book is over, there's hundreds of versions of it.
And I would think that with a book with the complicated plot like you do, you leave a lot of holes as you go, and you just figure, I'll go back and fix it in editing. But does that bother you to leave plot holes that you know you might forget to come back to, and, when the editor catches it, oh, shoot, I meant to do that?
Yeah, and it's not even that I'm worried that I'll forget to come back to it. It's just like to write later scenes without knowing what's happening before, I do it all the time. You have to train your brain to do it. Otherwise, you'll just get stuck in one area of your book and you just won't make any forward progress. So I am able to go forward without knowing something and go back to it. But it does kind of gnaw on you that you're like, okay, so now I've got the hero and the heroine here doing this. I have no idea how they got here, and I have no idea how they got out of that last situation. So you trust that the idea will come down the road, and even if it comes on your third edit, still you've solved that problem. The book looks like a mess until it's completely finished and turned in.
And then I know there's several minor characters that make appearances throughout the Gray Man book. There's a few in this book, and they're characters that people have all loved if they've read all these books. But do you have problems killing your darlings?
Yeah, I do. And more so. I don't know if that's a thing of getting older or whatever. I used to just be like, oh, it'd be cool if this person died here or whatever. And now I think about it more. I don't know what that's about, but it's true. I have some characters. I've even had villains that I totally intended that would die at the end of the book. But at the end of the book, I think, wow, I like this guy. I'd like to see him again, maybe down the road. And this is a series that we're on book 10, and seems like it's going nice and strong. So I've actually not just had trouble killing my darlings, I've had trouble killing my enemies at certain times. There's a pretty good body count in here, and the hero is definitely, there's skin in the game for him. He goes through a lot, but yeah, it's tough to kill off your secondary characters.
All right. Well, the book is fantastic. It's just another exciting book, and I think this is a great jumping in point for somebody that's never read a Gray Man book. This one's called Relentless. The book is available now wherever. Mark Graney, thank you so much, Mark, for joining me again to talk about this one.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Good to talk to you.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakalskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.